chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Slash Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 20.75, so we're making a run toward the records again today. NASDAQ Futures up 78. Dow Futures up 189. We have Mr. Liu.
I am here. How are you? Good morning.
I'm doing all right. I'm I'm in an odd state here this morning, Liu, because I stopped in to the local emporium last night and ran into somebody who is an odd duck, but a good guy, and he knows a lot about sports and so forth, and actually works down here in the industry. But when he has many cocktails, he can be a little abrasive, but you know that happens. And he basically gave a massive lecture regarding the world and economics when it comes to baseball or when it comes to sports these days. And to the point where I can't believe you do a radio show. We got to that point, because you don't know anything, basically. And I've been thinking about it, Lou, and I'm wondering if maybe the dude is right, and in some ways. I mean, when I say this, I mean I talk about what the Fed is doing, and Manny rolls his eyes the minute I do, and what it's done to asset pricing, and the fact that last week, just to cover up his mealy-mouthed BS, Jerome Powell put, $112 billion into the system in 1 week when we're supposed to be improving in the economy. Just to totally mess with traders and to run the markets up. I mean, you wonder why we're up, because we can't, there's money pouring in like if it's on a hot stove. And I still can't, Lou, I just can't assume that this is going to be going on forever to the point where I just can't reprice stuff to the extent it must be obvious to other people. And it just, obviously in the business I'm in, that bothers me because I'm supposed to be able to figure all this out. Specifically, we started talking about the Bears in Arlington Park. And so I'm sure you know the Bears.
I thought the Bears were a football team.
Right. But I'm going to tie this together here in a second, I think. They put in a bid for Arlington Park. Right.
How much had both of you been drinking? Let me just ask that question before we start down this this road.
I did not have anything with alcohol in it. I've been on kind of a diet. Been on kind of a diet, so no booze. So they can't accuse me of that. So that's why I remember the whole conversation.
Can't say the same for Gino, I'm sure.
Oh God, no. He was on his
I was going to say I think you're a significant portion of your funk might be attributable to the fact that the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet has been kind of Spartan lately.
Well, hang with me for a second, Lou. I mean, because we're talking about individual stocks. Like take AMC. This could never have happened. Well, I don't think it could have happened in any kind of normal past where you had a stock that people ran the stock price up so damn much and a company that's worth a fraction of that, that the company piled in and sold a bunch of stock at the ridiculously inflated price to now they actually are worth something. I mean, that if you would have put that down as a paper in college, you would have gotten an F, and yet it happened. But where I'm going with this is it has to do, because you guys know more about sports than me, it has to do with valuation, and the way people are looking at things. Because I said, we really don't need another sports stadium here. We've got one. It may not be the best. And I started to explain about how the Bears got $100 million from the NFL. And that's the reason why the Super Bowl kicker is for the local place to kick in $100 million. This is, this is in the last 10, 15 years. And in return for that, Goodell basically talks the local people into saying that a Super Bowl is worth $100 million. So if you pony up $100 million for the stadium for our team, we'll essentially get it back to you through a Super Bowl. But the Bears got a $100 million check from the NFL for the stadium. They contributed, so they essentially already got theirs. So even if the place held 80,000, I don't think they'd be getting the Super Bowl because they already got their dough. Now, that can be right, wrong, or in the barrel. But my question comes down to one of valuation. And they said, Chief, you're so far behind the times, it's scary. I said, if they buy this place, they're going to end up with, you know, they're going to borrow money from Goldman Sachs at some ridiculously low price. They're going to build this place. Arlington's going to fall all over themselves for them. They're not going to get any help from the state. They're going to spend $1.5 billion to $2 billion on this complex. And in Rivers Casino is, I guess, the Churchill Downs is a big investor in there. And Churchill Downs owns what's Arlington Park. So there's going to be some sort of a casino slash, you know, Bears kind of deal. They're going to build this incredible thing for concerts, and there's going to be gambling. And the franchise value is going to go to $6.5 billion tomorrow. And I said, well, what about, they got 10 more years at Soldier Field? He goes, Chief, it's $8.5 million a year. It's chump change. You're living in the 50s. They can pay the city the $85 million tomorrow and say, screw you, because this thing's going to be worth so much money, and it's going to make Dallas look like kid stuff. Lou, you know what? And I was thinking about it last night. I couldn't sleep. I'm thinking about it going, you know, if you look at this absolute easy money regime, and you just get, and if you have any kind of an advantage, like a Monopoly football team or a casino, you just go for it. And all of a sudden, and your value will triple in the next 10 years if this keeps up. I'm not so sure he's wrong. Well, and yet I know that this can't happen to everybody. Everybody can't get all the concerts in, and every one of these sports venues has been a loser. But then you turn around and look at the White Sox. You know, and I said, what about the White Sox? They pay like $2 million a year. They got 10 years left or something. I don't know the exact number. If somebody wants them at today's value, they can turn around and write the $20 million check to the state and say, see ya, asshole, and leave. I mean, the numbers have gotten so bizarre, Lou, that they are beyond logic. And I'm not so sure he's not right, and I was wrong. Just saying.
I don't think there's anything illogical at all about the Bears looking to go to Arlington. When I first saw the story, I thought, okay, so the Bears don't own their stadium. They can't sell naming rights, and they are under the thumb of what is, shall I say politely, an increasingly erratic city government.
But Lou, that is, okay, they don't own it, but their $8.5 million a year lease, that's nothing for a team that's making $100 million, for a family that's making $100 million.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
What are they gonna pay Justin Fields? $20-25 million?
No, what I'm saying is the first few years
of his contract.
But I mean, everybody looks, it's almost like everybody thinks they're a part owner, even though they're not. You look at it and say, they don't have naming rights, they're getting screwed. And I say, Jesus, $8.5 million lease, that is the best deal on earth. Just love it. But I guess that's why I'm thinking, like I'm 100 years old.
Yeah. This is the fallout from, in my opinion, as I said, an increasingly erratic and corrupt, and let me be frank, stupid city administration run by morons, elected by morons, as far as I can tell, and I've been saying that for a while. And if you're a business guy, and you're looking at the investments that you're making in personnel, and in people, and in your staffing, and in your equipment, and you're looking at the budget that you've got, you're saying to yourself, I want to integrate more stuff. And I don't want to be, I want to integrate more of my product. I want to integrate more of the revenue stream that's coming in from these games. And I can't do any of that as long as I'm tied to this lousy football stadium. And again, let's be honest. Soldier Field's redevelopment, managed by a corrupt city and incompetent city government, was a disaster.
Okay, but Lou,
you know, I mean, smallest, one of the smallest stadiums in the NFL, a cold weather team playing in a open air stadium. You know, I mean, Green Bay. They'll do that in Green Bay.
They do it in Minnesota now too. Minnesota's that.
Pardon me?
Minnesota? No, they have a retractable roof.
I
Minnesota's got a retractable roof.
It's a baseball team that does it. Okay. Right, the baseball team.
Yeah, they play in the summer.
Baseball team doesn't. But my point is, if you're looking at this from a, and you look across the city over at Wrigley, and you see what has happened with that ownership and their ability to control the revenue stream coming in from those baseball games, because they've got the control of that, effectively control of that local area with their shops and everything. And you say to yourself, you know what? I don't even want to mess with what the Pritzkers have had to mess with in terms of their ownership there. I'm going to go somewhere else. And I think it makes perfect sense.
Okay, I guess the question comes down, and again, this is why I'm berating myself here this morning. The city and the taxpayers put up a whole bunch of money for this place. Because it's 65,000 instead of 85,000, you know, should it be 85? Probably, Lou. But I also know that when it's 65, it means you can charge more per ticket. So it's not like your ticket revenue is 20%.
You don't know that, by the way.
What do you mean?
You don't know that.
Yeah, that's right. That's number one. Number two, and this will sound crazy, Chief, but in the overall revenue scheme of an NFL franchise, and this has been true for decades, they don't have to sell a single ticket.
I understand.
To be able to meet their team budget. Their TV revenue and the rest of it is much more important. And the ability, not really to sell tickets, but to set up all the other stuff that surrounds an active, ongoing football stadium like that, is a huge selling point for developing something in Arlington versus going to a Chicago Park service or Chicago Parks Department facility.
All right, well, I guess here's what I'm having trouble with. I'm not having trouble with any of the numbers that you and Maddie bring up. By the way, Maddie, I do know that if you
no, you don't.
What do you mean?
How do you know that? This is a 9.5 million person market. If they go to 85,000, there just might be 20,000 more demand of people at the same price.
They have as many skyboxes as you would have as if the place was bigger, probably. And if you had more, they're charging. 10 years ago, they were charging $40,000 for a game for the skybox.
I know that. I'm not talking about skyboxes. I'm talking about 20,000 seats.
Okay, could you end up with another 20,000 people on the grid on Wash side? Probably.
Or 10,000 on each side.
Okay, but...
They don't have to lower the tickets at all.
The point I'm trying to make is, you built the thing for the people. They have an amazingly low rent. They're making $100 million a year. And in the city...
But you are subject to the whims of morons and lunatics.
My point is, Lou, at some point, 2 years later... You're starting from a monopoly in the first place, okay, which I have a real problem with. I understand that's an issue. And then at the end of the year, you guys are screwing me. You're not, because I want more, you're not screwing me. I mean, maybe my whole life is screwed up because I was a trader. When you lost money, it meant you left the floor with less money than you walked down there. If I made $1 million in a day, nobody was screwing me because I didn't make $2 million. This mentality is just not me. I'm confessing here.
Well, I will say that I think you personally don't understand what I think a lot of people with huge amounts of money do, which is it's never enough.
Obviously,
you don't sit back and say, "Hey, I got a great deal here. I think I'll sit pat." That's not the mentality. And I'm absolutely convinced. Yeah, you know, Bears ownership, which, by the way, I understand might be undergoing a transformation here soon, but Bears ownership is looking at the city, you know, the owner of their stadium, and saying, "I don't want to deal with these people," and it may be that simple.
Well, but they're not.
I don't want to deal with these
people.
But
look at Dallas, Lou. Look at Dallas. They got, and everybody said, look at Dallas.
And they're nowhere near Dallas.
Okay, but they Dallas got $325 million from the area.
Arlington.
And what's his name was supposed to put in $325. Well, he wanted more than that. So he put in another $400 million of his own money. And he's a spectacular manager. I'm not so sure I like the guy personally. But he's a spectacular manager.
The L.A. stadium supposedly is completely privately funded, too.
First of all, none of them are.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's 100%, but they claim to be.
Okay, well, even the United Center, 100%. Well, it cost the city, what, $100 million to move to move stuff so they could put the thing in there. They had a big pumping station. The city never gets off easy, right? You never get off free. But that's another point. What I'm saying is Jerry Jones is a tremendous manager. The McCaskies dropped into some place where they didn't have to do anything except sit there and be bad managers and, oh, by the way, make $100 million a year with all the people on payroll at the place. I mean, they're not Jerry Jones. Now, could somebody else with a much taking advantage of all the monopolies, all the stuff? First of all, I can't believe the state's going to give any money right now. Does Arlington Heights have the wherewithal to come up with like $1.5 billion for a stadium? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they do.
I suspect that Arlington Heights is there in the mix only because they've got the facility and the open space to put this facility in. I see this as a straightforward deal where the Bears ownership and maybe the people that they're looking to sell to looks around and says, we could be doing so much better at a new site. We are the only football game in town. No matter how stupid the NFL gets in terms of its public relations or its management or whatever, no matter how stupid it gets, the game itself continues to be the most popular sport in America. And so we have leverage right now to leave Chicago, head to Arlington, and who knows what Arlington Heights is doing. If I were Arlington Heights, I'd be reaching out to every public or every private financing source I could get my hands on, saying, hey, come on in here. We'll do everything we can to make this deal go, you know, with zero tax rates and whatever. But come on in here, help us fund the bond, and you guys can be part of a bonanza.
Okay, but Lou,
I see that happening very easily. And again, this is just me talking.
Okay, but
if I was the Bears ownership, I would try to get as far away from control, from the control issues that I would be seeing with Chicago as possible.
Well, it starts from where I started the conversation is, how much of this is because of the easy money valuations jumping to the moon situation? Now, the Bears, right now...
Is there some reason, even if it is there some reason that the Bears shouldn't take advantage of it?
No, but I'm saying it's all a question of timing, Lou. I mean, right now these teams have all jumped to this, you know, $2-4 billion stuff. But I also know all 32 couldn't trade for that money. You know what I'm saying? And if, for instance, the Bears move out there and they spend, you know, $2 billion on this place, because we're talking $1.2 billion on the Dallas, and that was, you know, how many years ago? And you know,
you're right. If they're going to do it like the most recent teams have, like LA, for example, it's going to be in the $2 billion range.
All right, so $2 billion. If we're talking about a normal interest rate in normal times, that's, say, 6.5% for something like that. Well, now we're talking $120 million a year in debt service. That's a long way from $8.5 billion in lease. I mean, you know, in other words, it better work. You know what I'm saying? If it wasn't easy money,
You're looking at this from a strictly financial perspective, and I think that there are a number of other factors driving this train.
Well, I do too.
One of which is the situation in Chicago leadership.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, for the Bears, I mean, first of all, you don't have to argue with me about the city going down. There's been 3 murders on weekends within 1,000 yards of the office. So, I mean, you can't go further than me on that discussion. But I'm saying, in relation to the Bears, they ended up not the best place, okay? I mean, I think the thing looks lousy, but in terms of money, they have one of the best deals on earth. Like the White Sox, I think the White Sox have probably
the
best.
They're not controlling it.
Okay, but they didn't come up with the money either.
I mean, that's what's going on with this exploration of Arlington Heights.
Okay, but
they're not.
But what I'm saying is
They are looking at a model. There are any number of teams in large metropolitan areas that have set up this model of stadium ownership and then the revenue stream that goes from the stadium ownership and the ownership of the facilities around
it. Right, but the beginning...
And let me tell you something. If Churchill Downs comes in and manages and sets up a gambling operation... By the way, this would be anathema in the NFL of 30 years ago.
Oh, without a doubt.
40 years ago. But if Churchill Downs comes in and sets up a gambling sports book operation near the football stadium, which is basically what's happening in Vegas.
Right.
From the perspective of the club and the ownership, a partnership with somebody like that is money.
Okay,
they could look at this and say, look, we could project a revenue stream of whatever. And the fact that we've got a great deal on a lousy stadium, you know.
Yeah, but Lou, you're going at this like, I don't want to say like the Jewish guy who wanted God to help him win the lottery, and God says, well, you got to meet me halfway and buy a ticket. I mean, if you can do one of two things. Jerry Jones ponied up $600 million of his own money to get control. Okay, he paid for it. I mean, if you want control of your house, you buy it. You don't rent it. The Bears didn't want to come up with a friggin' dime, and they wanted a low lease, and they've got a place where they can charge with whatever they damn well please, basically, and they have, their revenue is enormous with no risk. Okay, so now here it is 20 years later. They don't have control. Of course they don't. They didn't come up with the billion, half a billion, or $750 million that Jerry Jones had.
But who says they can't come up with that now?
No, and they can. And if they want to, what I'm saying is, if this is America, well, I have no problem with the Bears buying Arlington Park, the Bears with maybe new ownership, with not coming up with the money, building a stadium. What I don't want is for the state and the Arlington Heights and the taxpayers to come up with more dough for these guys again, so 20 years from now, if I'm still here, they're going through the same routine, how they're getting screwed in Arlington Heights. If they want to do it on their own, all the Bears' money, Lou, I'm an American. I'm a capitalist. Knock yourself out.
So I think the safe thing to say right now is that Arlington Heights is not going to come up with $1 billion or $2 billion to develop this area.
I
think we can safely say that, right?
I think that they think somebody's coming up with something.
They don't have the revenue stream to do that, and they don't have the kind of tax base to be able to manage that.
You know what?
So look
at the Chicago area.
Oh, it's going to be funded by something other than the city.
Stop for a second. In the Chicago area, we have Bridgeview, which put up the Toyota Stadium for soccer. They are going to be paying taxes and raising people's taxes for 4 decades to pay for that albatross. You can't tell me that any one of these places has been a good deal for.
Well, that was just stupid because of anybody who thought soccer was going to draw.
Okay, at the end of the day,
crowds like that.
At the end of the day, do you think that Soldier Field has been a good deal for the taxpayer? Do you think Sox Park is? Every time I go out, well, if you could find a restaurant open downtown, every time I go downtown here, I pay 0.5% sales tax for White Sox Park. Now, there's people in downtown, I'm going to say 80% of the people downtown have never been to White Sox Park. They care less if the Sox ever win or lose. Why are they paying for those guys? And yet everybody's going to say the poor Sox are getting screwed. How are they getting screwed, Lou? I mean, I don't get to do that. I mean, that's where I come from. If they want to do it themselves.
I get it. But the short answer is, and you know this, and Maddie, I know Maddie does, the prestige with having a pro football team parked in your jurisdiction is so big that nobody would be able to turn down an offer. If the Bears came in and said, look, we're gonna locate here in your jurisdiction, all we need is a little tax break on whatever.
All right, so
nobody's gonna turn that
right
down.
But it's way more than a little. But I'm saying, you don't think that if the NFL wasn't a monopoly where this all starts, or think they are. They actually aren't, not like baseball is. Do you think for a second that somebody, I don't pick a team in a crummy place, wouldn't say, you can have Soldier Field for $8.5 million a year rent and become the next Chicago team? We need two teams. You don't think anybody, that's a spectacular deal. I mean, it may not be the one you want as valuations are going up by $1 billion a month, but it's not a horrible deal. For making money, the Bears, I think, are doing pretty well. And the only thing that they're screwed about...
Maybe that's the next NFL expansion. Although I don't think the NFL's right now looking at putting two new teams in.
Well, that would defeat the purpose. But the point is, why is that the NFL's decision? They're not a monopoly. They're not a legislative monopoly. I'm saying it all works together, and I agree with you. I actually think that it probably is, if everything stays steady, the next 10, 12 years, and the fact that the league doesn't go down because of his brain problem, or colleges don't stop playing football or something, which could happen. If everything stays steady and the money for nothing and the chicks for free, like the thing said, yes, you're crazy for not going out on a limb and trying to make the franchise value $6 or $7 billion, because you seem to be in a window when that is very possible right now. But I also know those windows can shut. And if you start talking about a $2 billion stadium with a 6% revenue tag on it, Lou, I don't think any one of these people wants to pay their first $120 million in interest, do you? That they get in the door?
I think that in terms of overall financial leveraging, that may make perfect sense.
Okay. I'm saying,
let me put it this way. I'm not surprised at all that the Bears are looking to get away from the city. If Chicago had a lick of sense, they would be looking around at some urban spot where they could do this redevelopment and drop the stadium into the downtown and expand it so that you had something like the Wrigley area.
Lou, it should have been in the South Loop.
They're not smart.
It should have been in the South Loop forever. But you know, this is how scummy these people are. You know what? When they were going to move to the West Side, you know what that negotiations and people think, oh man, the Bears are. You know what that negotiations fell apart about on the West Side?
No.
The Bears wanted to condemn all these stadium parking lots, most of which are owned by Wirtz, and turn them into Bear parking lots. You're going to condemn your hot dog stand and give the hot dog stand to Maddie. Well, even the Supreme Court wouldn't like that. It falls apart about they want when you sit in there and all of a sudden the league. Matter of fact, you can tell us after the break. But what revenue is shared? I don't think the gate's shared, is it? But the big thing that's pissing the league off, and like you say, these are rich people. All they care about is their next nickel.
The gates and certain aspects of the gates are shared. It didn't used to be that way.
Well, it is now,
but they're shared in a greatly lowered percentage than, say, television revenue.
Well, from what I understand, the big bitch the other owners have against the Bears is the stadium rights are evidently totally shared. The naming rights. So the fact that the Bears can't sell the naming rights for, pick a term, $3.2 million a year means that every owner doesn't get his $100,000 check. And that's what...
That's one of the complaints about the Bear Park. But I mean, from Jerry Jones' perspective, I sink $3 billion into the stadium complex in Dallas. And I put this thing up. I've got this huge revenue stream coming in from the stadium that I have to share at a certain percentage with the rest of the league. I'm making all this money, but most of it, or a sizable chunk of it, is going to the league. I look around, and there are the McCaskies sitting on their duffs, not doing any of that stuff because they can't.
No, because they wouldn't anyway, Lou. They're not Jerry Jones.
Maybe that's the case, but if you're again an aggressive business person, and the McCaskies are the exception, and so are the idiots here in Denver. The vast majority of NFL owners are basically pirates, and they are sharp and direct, and you know. They don't mess around on business stuff, and so this is, I mean, by the way, why this kid with the torn Achilles gets himself cut out here. But they're cutthroat business people, and they're sharp.
Okay,
and they didn't become billionaires by sitting back and watching the revenue come in.
But that's why other people have to say no once in a while, Lou. I think SBF is up 1950, NASDAQ is up 78. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber, and the board. S&P futures up 20.25. We're making a run at it again this morning. NASDAQ futures up 81. Last week didn't look so good. This week looking pretty good. Dow futures up 181. Individual stocks. I got Caterpillar up $1.71. I got Boeing up $1.50. I got Goldman Sachs up 235. JP Morgan up 124. Microsoft up 136. Everything is reasonably up here this morning. Nothing major, but everybody's, there isn't a red light in the industrials this morning. At least not yet. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 97.6%, FTSE up 36.5%, CAC-Iran up 66, that's a full 1%, so CAC-Iran's leading the charge over there. Nikkei up 34 cents, wow. I'm going to say it's flat, Manny, what do you think, 34 cents? These guys were all over the place last week. They were down 4% one day and up 3% like the next day. So they've been crazy. Shanghai up 43 cents, so I guess that's flat. Hang Seng up 55, it's 0.2, and they've got big problems with that about. Regarding the last pro-democracy newspaper in Hong Kong being shut down. I wonder if that's going to be a world issue one of these days, if it isn't already. Yesterday's review, the Dow was down 71, S&P down 4, NASDAQ was up 18, it was a pretty slow day. Bonds unchanged at 1.49, Bund unchanged at minus 0.18, Japan unchanged at positive 0.05. Oil down 8 cents, so let's call that unchanged. But $73, so that's pretty high. Brent down 6 cents, $75.13. Natural gas unchanged at $3.33, but again, that's a high number for June. RBOB unchanged at $2.25. That's up, what's that up, Manny? 90 cents in the last year or so? That's a lot, because that multiply that up a little bit for the tank. Gold up 79 cents, so call that flat. Silver is flat. Copper's flat, so we got a lot of flat stuff today, except for the market. Crypto, 33,548 for the Bitcoin. It's up 363. So it's kind of in this violent range between just under 30 and 36, and now it's kind of right in the middle of that range. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start here on a Thursday morning. Actually, probably the best start of the week. No issues at all on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson, traffic starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive's quiet in both directions, and the suburban tollways are looking good. So we're off to a great start. No accidents in the area. We, of course, will let you know if that should change. Weather today, some sunshine early, and then we'll have some storms roll into the area later on. We'll reach a high of 82 with a chance of showers. Right now, it is mostly clear and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104. Right now, it's clear and 78. In sports, the White Sox snapped their 5-game losing streak, topping the Pirates yesterday afternoon in Pittsburgh 4-3. Cubs were off. They're beginning a 4-game series in L.A. tonight against the Dodgers. 9:10 first pitch Central Time tonight with Zach Davies on the hill. Diamondbacks lost to the Brewers 3-2, so Milwaukee takes a half-game lead in the NL Central over the idle Cubs. Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals is tonight for our Phoenix listeners. The Suns looking to take a commanding 3-0 lead as they'll travel to L.A. to take on the Clippers. That's a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip-off. And Chris Paul is expected back tonight after missing the first 2 games due to testing positive for COVID. The Eastern Conference Finals tipped off last night, and the Atlanta Hawks upset the Bucks in Milwaukee to take Game 1, by the way. Lastly, in some, I guess, sad news, legendary Blackhawks broadcaster Pat Foley was announced that he will retire at the end of this next season. So this upcoming season will be his final one, his 39th broadcasting Blackhawks games. He, of course, was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame back in 2014. He's won 5 Emmys, and he's also in the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame. Sad to see Pat go, but we'll be fun listening to him one last time. Chief.
You know how he got the job?
I do not.
He would have maybe got it anyway, because he was certainly a talented guy, but his dad, was it Foley Buick or Foley Cadillac or something? Was a huge sponsor to the Hawks. And the kid wanted to be a hockey announcer. And I think he did hockey at wherever college he went to, and then did minor league hockey. He did college hockey. I mean, he honed his craft, because obviously he's really good. And he kind of worked his way in because of the sponsorship. Like I said, he might have got there anyway, but that was his angle.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. What was it, Lou? Was it Foley Buick or Foley something something? I don't know if they still have the auto dealership.
One of my favorite comments, it's in a book called Sports Quotes, but it was a baseball announcer who said that the broadcast of a hockey game sounds like the broadcast of one continuous mistake.
Well, yeah, sort of.
It kind of does.
Well, I remember a comment from Lloyd Pettit used to help out on baseball. He was an announcer. He could do a bunch of stuff, but he did baseball. He helped out Brickhouse, and then he would take a week or 10 days. This is back when they only had 6 teams. He would go to visit everybody at all the different hockey camps. So in that time, you had what, 6 times 18 people? Well, maybe there was a couple extra hanging around somewhere, but you essentially had 120 people, 110 people in all of hockey, right? So and nobody wore a helmet. So I remember one day, if you listen to him, he was better than this guy. Maybe the times were just different or whatever, but I think this Foley is the best, other than Lloyd Pettit, the best I've ever heard. But the guy says to him, "How can you read the numbers that fast?" He goes, "Who looks at the numbers? I know all these people personally. I just look at their face. I don't need to look at the numbers." But back when nobody wore a helmet,
yeah.
He goes, I know every person. It's like we call it a game at the local park. It's like, I know everybody.
I broadcasted hockey when I was at the Air Force Academy, maybe five or six games. It was similar then too, although those guys were almost all wearing helmets at that point, even in the late 70s. But, I knew everybody, at least on the Air Force team. I knew the way they were shaped and I knew the way they skated. So, one funny story, and I hope Tom will forgive me for this. One of our players, and it was a pretty good forward, his name Tom Uren, Uren, and he was very good. But I was our booth was next to another booth for the visiting team doing the broadcast, and for some reason they didn't catch the fact that his name was pronounced Uren with the accent on the second syllable. They pronounced his name Uren.
Of course, yeah.
So here comes Uren crossing the blue line, Uren racing down the ice.
Yeah.
It just created this image of something horrible happening in the hockey stadium that evening. Anyway, Tom, if you're listening, please forgive me.
I didn't know that you were...
That was one of the funniest parts of my sports broadcasting career.
That's great. I didn't know that you were such a hockey buff.
I love to watch hockey. It's torturous to watch it on TV because you just can't follow it. But I love hockey games in person. I tried to attend as many Blackhawk games as I could reasonably get to, notwithstanding the elevated ticket price. And so I've gone and I enjoy the Rockies here. So I wouldn't call myself a diehard hockey fan. I don't really know enough about the game, but I mean, I played it when I lived in Canada.
I think the high def has helped out the TV, Lou. I think the high def has helped out the TV part.
I would agree. Yeah.
Oh, it definitely has. And the replay, I love the fact that the replay catches a lot of this stuff, but hockey is one of those games that, I enjoy so much more in person. Just because you can see the sweep of the ice and you can see the plays developing, it's kind of like being in a football game.
Yeah.
In person. I'll watch football on TV, but I really enjoy it when I'm there and I can see the whole field.
Well, the best game I ever enjoyed as a game, football, was arguably, crazy as it may seem, is at Ohio State, because they had a huge board, a video board, and you could watch. I mean, if you want, and they would replay every play. So if you wanted to see, the left tackle, which I like to do, or watch the secondary and do the rotation, I mean, I don't know as much about it as you do, Lou, but I could watch that and then look right up to the board and see what I missed. So you got the best of both worlds, I thought.
That is great. And I would say, to Lou's point, baseball and hockey are definitely, for me, the two sports that are much better in person than on TV. Football, I actually like better on TV, but I will say there is something about when you can see all 22 and see what they do on an individual play in person, especially if you have decent seats in a football game. That's pretty cool that the TV can't catch. Or, sometimes you'll see a wide receiver that does a double move and breaks open, but the quarterback doesn't see him, or the quarterback's under pressure and the TV might not pick up on that, and you kind of see that develop. I love that stuff.
Well,
it's a different kind. I mean, I grew up watching film, I actually enjoy end zone seats because that's a lot of the film perspective that I grew up watching, and I can see, you can see everything start to move the way a play is supposed to be designed. I'm a big in person fan. Baseball, I can just only stand to watch when I'm there in person. It's just too slow on television.
Well, you can't get any kind of appreciation on television of what the defense is like and how far those guys go and how difficult the routine play is
in baseball. Yeah,
in baseball.
I mean, I love baseball games in person because I like drinking beer and eating hot dogs and sitting in the warm weather, but. But you have to be a really big baseball fan to watch the games on TV like Chief and I do.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't do that.
I'm, Well, I must admit, it's a lot easier to watch baseball on TV when both of your teams are doing as well as the Cubs and White Sox are, vis-a-vis or in comparison to a fairly lousy team like the Rockies.
It helps.
Well, the Cubs actually have relief pitchers.
Yeah, and I mean, the Rockies Stadium, as much as I love Wrigley, and I do, I think Wrigley is probably one of the best stadiums to watch a game in all of baseball. To go to Coors Field and sit in the, you know, the west or the east stands and watch the sun go down over the Rocky Mountains, because you're much closer to the mountains there than you are in other parts of Denver, and to watch the sun go down over the mountains, you know, the clouds around, so that all that, that's an unbelievable setting, and you know, worth the price of an admission by itself.
Yeah, Coors Field's a great stadium.
So you get a better view than like downtown Detroit, where the windows are all boarded up.
yeah, and the, you know, we don't have the punctuating gunfire sounds, although we're getting there. We don't have the punctuating gunfire sounds that you do in Wrigley or at I still call it Comiskey.
Yeah, God. Well, remember when they were building this place, they used to have bullet holes in the seats from across the expressway, but all those projects have been torn down. With nobody living there, so I wonder where they all went. Crazy stuff. But no, just to kind of sum up our thing about the Bears, I don't have any issue with anybody building anything on their own. I mean, if you want to build yourself a skyscraper, knock yourself out, as long as you're paying for it. But this constant and the idea that you give somebody such a great deal. And then all of a sudden they say, well, I'm only paying this much, I can leave. Somehow that's not why you gave them the deal, is it? Right?
LeSean writes.
But it's interesting, we've got two sports topics going this morning, yeah, that I, or at least we're going to. I wanted to merge your discussion on economics, and maybe when your friend gets drunk again, you can query him on this. The Supreme Court's decision involving the NC2A on Monday, I thought was pretty good. Or on Tuesday, I guess.
Well, let's take this write-in question first.
Oh yeah, real quick. It's just LeSean writes in on Twitter just before you wrap up the stadium talk. He says, Chief and Lou, the Minnesota Twins wanted a retractable roof as well, like the football team got. However, the site of Target Field needed additional land to have a retractable roof, about 30% more land. With limited property size for the new stadium, the Twins chose to go with an open-air stadium. Otherwise, the Twins would have done the retractable roof as well, like the Vikings did.
Well, I like the retractable roof down in Arizona, I think, is awful. I mean, that place...
The baseball stadium?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a dreadful place to watch a game.
Not only
that was built, you know, 25 years ago.
Well, not only that. Well, I mean, they didn't do the Astrodome. The Astrodome, they used to cool it to 72. What do they take that thing down to? Like 85? It's roasting in there.
Well, I've only been there to one game, and I've talked about this before, but it was in 2016, the second game of the season, when Kyle Schwarber blew out his knee. And I was there, and it was terrible because I thought our season was over.
You're a jinx.
Turns out we won the World Series that year. But it was, you know, April 2nd, call it. And it happened to be a beautiful day in Phoenix. It was probably 78 degrees in Phoenix that day, or 80 degrees in Phoenix.
There's no breeze in there, though, whatsoever.
And I thought, man, this would be a great time to go to the game, see the Cubs. They'll have the roof open. I'll get the great experience. They had the roof closed inexplicably, and it was hotter in the stadium than it was outside.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, what are we doing here? It was probably 85 in that stadium.
They had the same problem at the Humphrey Dome in Minneapolis. In fact, they used to call it the Hubert H. Humphrey Memorial Slow Cooker. Because it was the climate control in there for the baseball games especially just wasn't very good, and of course we all know what happened when it snowed there.
Yeah,
and they for some reason they decided this is the day we're going to drop the temperature inside the stadium.
Well, the only thing about the thing in Arizona is that, let's just say, the merging of the heat, the lack of air conditioning, the halter tops and the shorts is a good mix.
Not a bad mix.
No, that you're not gonna go wrong with that kind of connection. The Superdome has the same vibe.
So anyway, go back to the
Supreme Court thing. How narrow is that? Because we were trying to talk about it yesterday.
It's quite narrow. And you know, I'm here's my concern. I think the court got it wrong in the sense, and I'm sure most of the listeners will have no trouble believing that I'm arrogant enough to say this. I think the court got it wrong. I think they're using the wrong model, and I think that's been the problem with this discussion all along. They're using a business model for something that is in many ways not a real business. It's something else. The control that these guys have, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be sharing revenue, and I'm not saying, you know, the athletes are should be considered true amateurs, but what is happening within this model, this business model, is going to lead to some really troubling results the minute all of this breaks out in this anti-monopoly discussion.
Lou, I have a quick question.
So what I wanted to say was the decision is narrow. It relates to educational related compensation that schools can provide for the kids coming in. And the initial case was whether the NC2A could limit that. And the court said, no, you can't, because that's collusion. It's the functional equivalent of price fixing. And so schools are going to be allowed to offer whatever inducements they want to get these kids in, as long as they are sort of in kind related to education. And that would include, by the way, tuition at graduate school and things like that.
Well, what does it do for the definition? Again, this is a question. I don't know the answer. They consider, like, me and you, I guess, as a part of the school when it comes to the Air Force Academy or Notre Dame in regards to boosters and things like that, correct? That's sort of a NCAA rule. So if I were to hire, you know, Maddie Weber's kid as a intern here at PTI and paying $25,000 a year and don't care if he shows up, is that covered by this rule? In other words, can Notre Dame now tell me I can't do that? Does this rule cover that or not? Or is it so narrow it doesn't
do
that?
I think that's outside the scope of the educational I think that would be outside the scope of the educational inducement that would be allowed. Now, hiring the student athlete to work at the school, giving them, you know, this is all going to have to be sorted out by the NC2A and probably through litigation. Giving the kid, you know, a job at the school, giving him an internship within some academic department, the athletic department, probably not an issue. Funneling the kid off to some kind of, you know, third party business, probably not allowed, but, you know, the distinctions now get to be pretty fine, because if I'm interested in studying, let's say, paleontology or archaeology, my father had an Irish archaeologist who played for him at Minnesota, a guy named Dave Huffman, who was a Notre Dame grad. So if you're Notre Dame and this kid comes in and says, you know, I'm really interested in archaeology, and Notre Dame says, oh, well, we could place you with, you know, this world famous Notre Dame grad archaeologist who's digging in peat bogs in Northern Ireland. You know, is that clearly related to educational activity, but not school controlled? It's a third party that they'd be shipping you off to. Is that, you know, would they be allowed to pay for it? I don't know. I mean, that's going to have to be sorted out. Giving players computers or giant flat screens so that they can they've got better visual experiences for reading papers and stuff like that. I mean, you can see how quickly that would get distorted, and is going to be distorted by this rule. So that's one side of the decision. The other side of the decision that's getting all the attention, of course, is the Kavanaugh concurrence, where he says, look, you're a collective colluding group, and you know, we're gonna treat you that way, and that pretty much opens the door, at least in everybody's
well, he's right. He's right.
Opens the door for all kinds of lawsuits over name, image, and likeness. So the question now becomes how much the school can get involved in that. I don't think the school can get involved in it at all, because Title IX is going to come in, and this is why these college activities are not really businesses. Title IX is going to come in on this.
Well, what
the school says, we're going to arrange for name, image, likeness compensation for a player. The minute the school does that, you're going to have a corresponding demand from the women's programs. Let's say.
Well, Lou, you having been an agent, how do you say you can hire an agent for marketing, but he's not supposed to go around to other schools and see if somebody wants to pay you to transfer there? I mean, how do you tell the agent only talk about one subject on the phone? I mean, to me,
you can't.
I mean, if all of a sudden
I think you're going to run into the same situation now that the NCAA has tolerated in baseball and in hockey for some time, which are sort of limited, as you said, limited marketing agents or limited advisors helping a kid figure out whether it's better to sign the AAA contract or go to school. Hockey's got a similar arrangement. The NCAA kind of turns a blind eye to these things so that you know, the parents and the kid can be making intelligent choices about school vis-a-vis professional career. But I think all of that is going to break down, and it's going to have to be, I think it's going to have to be purely commercial, because, as I said, the minute the school comes into this and says, okay, we're going to make arrangements for our star football quarterback to profit from name, image, likeness, because he's wearing our jersey, and they can do this because he's wearing our jersey, then you're going to see a demand from the women's side of the sporting activities in the athletic department stepping up and saying, okay, fine, you've just given this guy X amount of money, we want the same amount coming back to our program.
Well, I'd much rather look at the women than the guys. I'd rather look at the women than the guys, so that's all right with me.
Well, but in terms of commercial activity,
well, how does this?
I mean, you and I talked about this. The ugly little secret is that men's basketball and men's football fund a tremendous number of non-revenue sports, many of which women's sports.
Other than like what John's brother was going to do years and years ago, where he was going to go, you know, just model, you know, flannel shirts in a Kohl's catalog. I mean, how far can you go? I mean, you're not going to let. Well, I don't know. Maybe you will. How do you let your you know, very, very good and, oh, by the way, attractive lady basketball player or your quarterback, how do you let them model Adidas when the school's up their eyeballs in Under Armour? I mean, how's that going to work?
That's one issue. That's one issue. The other issue is, for a lot of these kids, you know, their value is not just as an athlete, but it's as an athlete in that school's uniform.
Right.
Yeah, and at that point, the schools can say, no, we're not doing it.
Yeah, all right.
And so you've got some real issues surfacing there.
Well, we got 10, 12 years to talk about the Bears stuff, so today we just started it. Take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 85. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitis, and we'll talk to him about where all these interest rates are going. Can you get money for nothing? Maybe.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 88. We have Mr. Dan Janatis from Kratos Capital. Both of you guys, this might be something that you both want to put in your back pocket. If you don't know where you're going, you might wind up someplace else.
Absolutely.
Now, who did that come from?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
That's a yogi-ism.
Okay, there you go.
And then there's some truth to it, you know. Just
God. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
As he used to say, one of the guys on the board said, "We don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way." Sort of the same principle. So, Dan, what's up? I was actually thinking of you in the midst of our, interesting discussion regarding asset prices, regarding interest, and how it's hitting all walks of life. And we even talked about, professional football teams. I mean, can the Bears essentially leverage this, getting money for nothing if they can, or getting something from the, borrowing ability from Arlington Heights or the state or whatever it is, and go build themselves a huge stadium at, 3% and, triple the value of the team. I mean, it kind of comes out everywhere, doesn't it? When some people get this money for nothing and other people don't, and if you have the ability to do it, it's almost, I guess you could say you're an idiot for not taking advantage of it and building everything you can.
Man, yeah, absolutely. Yep, that's what it's there for, and it doesn't seem like the spigot is falling down anytime soon. It's, the Fed, again spoke this week, and Powell is still, while he's acknowledging inflation, he's, still looking at it as a, transitory issue, nothing like what we saw in the 70s is what he said, and I agree with him on that. However, where I don't think I agree with him is that some of what is happening with inflation is going to be more sustainable. And where I come out here is on labor issues, labor wages. I think this is an issue going back to pre-COVID. Again, we've gone through a very different period. However, we've also picked up from where we were in March of last year. And one of the hot topics, and the only hot topic as it impacted inflation, was higher wages, and when we were going to see that, and we are going to see that, and that's coming, and I don't think those are going to be temporary. I don't see wages going up and then coming back down again. So, and I don't see wages going up to attract people back into their places of employment and then dropping again. That just isn't very motivating for employees, and it's not very good from a company's point of view either. Several of the companies I've been talking to, quite a few companies, we're in a conference again this week, and several companies say that they are, pretty much every company is facing labor issues. Some are handling it better than others. It really depends on the nature of the business. Some of the companies have been able to pass through some of their cost of SG&A to their customers and some of their raw material costs. When we're talking about things like lumber, we've seen it come back a little, so it's possible that that this is, when it comes to some of the commodities, that this is temporary. However, I still think on a bigger picture, labor is an issue, and this issue, as you mentioned a minute ago, is, asset inflation, bloating, looking at some of the fundamental expenses that an individual has, and those would be housing, those would be food, those would be automobiles, those would be gas. You need higher wages to pay those, and that's I don't see any turn anytime soon in any of those areas, in terms of housing or food or gas. I mean, we are in a direction of inflated assets, and that's continuing. This is again where we picked up where we left off. So while some of it I do believe will be transitory, I think we're in that part of the cycle where we see some flattening of the yield curve, which is starting to happen, where we see more talk as time goes on about higher rates on the short end, causing more flattening and maybe eventually leading to a little bit of slowdown. So the argument about whether we should continue to, fund, put all this money into the system, I'm in strong agreement and do think we're going to have a successful infrastructure bill. When it comes to some of the other issues that are on the table right now, I'm not sure that that's the case. And I'm not sure that's the case not only from my own point of view, but that's what I'm hearing from the managers. That's what I'm hearing from the CEOs of a lot of the companies who would be impacted by these decisions. And these would be people in the energy sector. People are talking about clean air. I had a meeting with the utility company yesterday. There is still a much lower cost of producing electricity and gas, even coal. And there's a challenge. While we want to have clean air, there's still this challenge, and I still think there's this time gap that we're going to have before we get there. And if anything, if there's more of a push in that direction, I think that's going to promote higher inflation, because the costs are higher, the cost of labor is going to be higher, the cost of implementing these programs is going to be higher. I just don't think the programs are going to happen anytime soon. However, if that's the direction that we're moving in, I think inflation, that kind of feeds the inflation story even more.
Well,
so the question is
now,
what do you do now? What's good? Where are some good investments? And one thing that we've looked at is a couple of the names that I've mentioned that have sold off on good news. So one of those is Thunderbird. We've talked about Thunderbird Entertainment is a company that does both animation and factual. Highway Through Hell is one of their TV shows that you may know of, but it's a Canadian-based company, ticker symbol TBRD, ran up into the mid-fives from, less than two when we started buying it, and now it's around four. They also have an over-the-counter stock, THBRF, and it doesn't, it's fairly liquid. It's liquid enough in this environment to be able to buy some. That stock has sold off from a high of five, and now it's down to about 350. So there's opportunities there. I spoke with the CEO again yesterday. Only more good news to come. There's a little bit of the structural stuff going on with them in terms of being uplisted. They're going to be uplisted to NASDAQ. But this is an example of something that's staring you in the face, saying this is a really good buying opportunity. This isn't a Bitcoin story. This is a good long-term story that has sold off and is in a growth mode and has only had really good things happening, and more good things happening, has actually benefited from the labor issues, a company that's attracted the best talent from your competitors like Disney and Pixar and Lionsgate. So I still really like this, probably still my top stock pick. I like it even more at 3.5. Another name that we mentioned, going on more like the yield side, looking for yield, self-storage, Global Self-Storage, SELF. That stock had traded up to 6.5. We were able to buy some recently at 5.25. So it was trading around 4, trades up to 6.5, settles back at 5.25. You got to love it at 5.25, and you're getting a 6.5% dividend. So a 6.5% payout, and you're in a sector of the real estate market, the REIT market, that is hot and is expected to continue to be hot for quite some time. So these are sort of layup stories as I see them, and some of the changes and the volatility that we've seen in the market have created these opportunities, and know, it's our job to pay attention and to know when to come step back in again. Certainly keeping up on what's going on with the companies, but knowing that, you know, there is opportunity. So when people talk about overvalued, if something is sold off, you know, 30% or 40%, you know, it's cheaper. It may be a lot more attractive, and it may be worth a second look. Or I would go even stronger than that. I would say if you like it at 5, you got to love it at 3.5.
Well, it sounds like you had a week sort of like mine. I had 6, you know, pretty significant positions. 3 of them are in stocks that I think are worth 0, but I've had positions there anyway because they're kind of going up. They're all up, and the ones that I think are real stocks paying nice dividends and stuff are all down. But, I mean, you can definitely see that happening now in your portfolio, especially last week. You know, when all the Dow was getting murdered all week and all the other stuff was going up.
No, absolutely. And even in some of the infrastructure names that we have, although it was sort of a mixed bag, I still like the infrastructure play. You know, we talked about a number of the names. I'm going to be visiting a couple of these. I have a couple of face-to-face meetings finally with some of the companies. SWM is one that we've been talking about for a while. Aztec is another one that's does ready-mix concrete. Federal Signal out there in Chicago that does heavy machinery as well as, you know, they cop cars and sirens and all that. But Nasdaq, I'd say, of all those, is the one that I really like the best, MTZ. They've traded off as well. They were up to like around 120. Now they're back closer to 100. I think this is a screaming buy because it's a company that's going to benefit from the infrastructure build-out of the cell phone structure, the telecommunications. They're major, they do maintenance of cell towers, and they're a very well-run company. So those are some names that I think we've seen the sell-off, and they've just become less popular for whatever reason the last few weeks, and there's opportunity. And if you think of, you know, some people say sell in May and go away, well, I don't know if I agree with that, because if some of these names sell off and there's less attention focused on them, that's where the opportunities to come in as a value manager and say, hey, these have sold off and the fundamentals have actually improved. So this is an, you know, a way you make money in the market.
Well, that's true. I just am having we missed a discussion earlier and I want to go over it, but we were talking about some sports teams and you look at, you know, they're worth $1 billion. Now they're worth 2. Now they're worth 3. Well, if you build your own stadium, it could be worth 6. And it's all sort of predicates on whatever you're getting this money for less than market rate. I mean, if, for instance, you know, the Bears could build a $2 billion stadium and somehow get money from a city or get 2% money from God knows where on a TIF or something. TIF. That's different, but if you're paying a market rate, a normal market rate of say 7, well, your first $140 million a year goes to debt service, and that's a hell of a lot of money for a football team, you know. So I mean, it's massive difference. If you can catch it just right and get some buffoon to give you that money at that low level, you could jump yourself to that amazing valuation. But I just think, Dan, it's risky when you're talking 10 years out, and B, it just isn't right. I don't know how that right now. I mean, some dude was on TV yesterday, and he's talking about the 10-year rate now, by any stretch, any common stretch, even if you're being charitable with the inflation rate, we're talking minus 3.5% return. And he goes, it's just not sustainable. And in anybody's mind, and you've got a chairman of the Fed telling you something's transitory when he put in $110 billion last week, which has to be a record. I mean, what in God's name is he doing? How do you say both? I mean, it's like this fire is going to go out as you heave a gallon of gas at it. You know, don't worry.
No,
this fire will be out in an hour.
Agree.
I don't know how this ends. I have nothing that I've read about in my education tells me how this is going to end when guys are winging gas on the problem that's right there for all to see.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you, and I almost can hear different voices. It's sort of like two, you know, you're hearing like two different things in the conversation if you listen really carefully, and there's a message that's coming from somewhere, and I'm not sure exactly where it's coming from, but it's saying just keep throwing, you know, throwing money at the system. Just keep, you know, buying back bonds. Just keep, you know, improving the liquidity in the system because it's still very broken. And I'm not hearing that story. We know as traders, right, that there's a lot of liquidity in the system, and I'm really not hearing that story from companies. And I'm not that, and you're exactly right, the logic in past years does not make sense at this point in the business cycle to be making extreme decisions. One thing that I really hear when I listen to these is just that when the questions come in about how, you know, what are we going to do with this debt level down the road, and the questions are often dodged, or they're, hey, that'll be a problem for future. Well, just as younger generations don't want to be dealing with issues that are going to be problems down the road, this is one that I don't think is going to be one they're going to want to deal with 5 or 10 years down the road either. So I think there has to be smart investing. I think there has to be cutbacks, and, you know, I think the cutbacks in some of the expenditures for unemployment, for example, I think were good moves. I think we need to see more of that going forward, and less, you know, less of you know, the old, you know, where we were a year ago. We're not there. We're in a much better position today. People are back to work. Everyone's looking for employees. A large number of people want to get back and get out and work, and you know, they might have to pay a little more, but from the point of view of the employee, you know, you make a little more money, you get back and you're productive, and you know you're in a good situation right now. So flooding the system with additional money is not, I do not.
Dan, how does I mean, I ask you these questions, Ben, because you always give me a pretty darn good answer. But in the city of Chicago, I was on another show a little while ago, and I said, in the city of Chicago, you're starting to understand, you know, in the Rahm Emanuel administration, in his first term, he raised fees all over the place to the point where it was the equivalent of a 40% tax increase. And he, and then in the second term, they actually did raise property tax and so forth, roughly, I mean, it was almost 50%, wasn't it? So, I mean, it didn't sound so bad, 50% over an 8-year period. But at the end of the day, you know, he damn near doubled the taxes. And so the idea that just let everybody spend, it was starting to, you know, stick everybody right where the sun don't shine, right? And yet, right now we're having these debates as to whether or not, you know, we should raise the corporate, I'm not saying, you know, we should or shouldn't, but we're gonna raise the corporate tax rate from 21 to 30. Oh my God, we can't do that. Maybe we'll do it like 24 or 23 and we can't stick these guys like that. God's sake, Dan, does anybody realize that we're spending twice as much as we're taking in? Right now, we need to double. I'm not saying, God, I don't want to pay any more. But does anybody have any idea of how far afield we are here? We're not talking about the difference between 21 and 24. We're talking 21 to 42, just to get right. We're not even close. I mean, should I not be reading that stuff?
No, I think we have to read that stuff. But I think the problem is that it's the time frame of the... You know, I think it's all being pushed out in the future. And yeah, there was a period of time where we had this pandemic. The pandemic is, you know, we're moving past that at this point. And part of moving past that is sort of getting back to an economy that can still have the ability to grow without taking on additional leverage and not have problems down the road. Like, you know, hopefully avoid some problems down the road that could be, you know, potentially serious and, ones that I don't think the Fed is really, you know, focused on or really talking about. You know, they get the questions, but it seems to me that they dodge them pretty quickly. They're saying, you know, today we have to kind of do one thing at a time, and this is our first, you know, our first priority is continuing to fund. And I think that, you know, what I'm hoping is with infrastructure that becomes the primary focus, just because it's an issue that I think the policymakers agree on across the board. And it's certainly something that we need to remain competitive, as a country. And so those are, I think, hopefully that those get passed, that they get through first. And, it certainly will help the companies we've invested in, but I think it also will be a sort of a positive, you know, positive for the country on a lot of levels. you know, both the economy, but also, you know, seeing progress. A little bit less of this, you know, getting these loans or getting this capital to be able to finance things that really, you know, have been out of reach and probably should be out of reach, because, you know, hand just handing money out is not a solution to this. And in fact, it's, you know, it can and will create, you know, problems.
Well, I mean, where are we going to get? I mean, I've yet to see, and we're certainly not going to solve it now. I've yet to see, and I guess I could, I don't know, maybe I could even, if I could find it, I can't find it, but I'd like to know just what the whole, take roads, for instance, roads and bridges, I'd like just a two-page accounting of the last 25 years, how much did we spend, I mean, how much did we tax in specific areas, state and federal, I mean, how much did we not spend, did we steal the gas tax, or I mean, does the gas tax, are we spending intelligently all 12.5% cents? I think, what's it, 12.5 cents is the federal tax, right? I think.
Right.
I'm not positive. Okay. Are we spending that intelligently, and we just now, because of inflation and other things, and the fact that we just, you know, we got more roads than we thought we had, or maintenance was more than we thought, we need to bring that to 25 and we'd be okay. I'm not saying I want a gas tax going up. But I have no idea what these guys are even talking about. Did they steal that money for other stuff and didn't spend the 12.5 on the roads? And now we want to print some money to redo the highway trust fund. But I have no idea what they're talking about. Do you?
No, but I do know that you make a good point that there is money that is, you know, that where we all wonder where it's going. I know paying taxes, and you see a certain percentage of it, say, going to schools. I owned a property in Georgia, and I a lot of my property taxes there were, you know, a very large percentage were going to a school system that just frankly wasn't that good. And I would like to have seen some breakdown of that, and, you know, less money going to, you know, fire, police, roads. I think there has to be a revamping of the system. The municipalities that are well run, I think, are going to handle this very well, and others are going to continue to spend foolishly or you know, allocate money to these other areas. This should not be a time to try to sneak in other expenses, just as it wouldn't be if a company was to do an offering and have a special purpose, you know, have a reason for the offering, raising capital for a specific purpose, and then saying, hey, oh, by the way, you know, let's take care of some of these other expenses along the way. It just isn't, yeah, it's just not good management. And also the transparency, I think, as you're mentioning, it's very important, you know, as a citizen and as a taxpayer to know where the money's going.
Well, I got this this kind of brain shock when we had some people in, you know, we had some people affiliated with the firm that did some agricultural exchange work with China, of all places. So we had seven people from China in for really almost a month, where we took a break. These guys did. I went to a couple of outings just because they sounded like fun. Since there were seven of them and only like two of these people, they needed a few other bodies, right? So I was one of the other bodies. But we did an ethanol plant, but we did a barge tour on the Illinois River, which was really spectacular, right? I didn't realize, the only lock I ever went through was the one out to Lake Michigan, which is what, Maddie, 2 feet? Well, the ones in the Illinois River are like a couple of hundred feet. And you're at the bottom of this thing, and they're going to pour water in there, and you're supposed to float to the top, and you go, I hope this thing doesn't have a leak, right? I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's like you're in a coal mine down there. But anyway, but the guy starts talking about how they pay those guys are not going to drive onto the gas station with a big tug, so they fill up on the river, right? So they have diesel tax on the river that they pay, you know, whatever. The guy said it was like 20 cents a gallon or 15 cents a gallon. They have not put a new lock and dam in Illinois. There's one down by the last one near St. Louis, which maybe it's half Illinois, half Iowa. They have not put a new lock and dam in since the Depression. 80 years, for God's sake. Where does this money go? I mean, every day the guy fills up, how many gallons do you think he puts in a tug? 500 or some huge number, 1,000? All of a sudden I just paid, you know, $200 in taxes. Okay, I've been doing this for 25 years. I haven't seen a new lock and dam in 25 years. Where is it going?
Yeah, and you certainly need preventative maintenance for these things, because we don't want to be in a situation where there's major issues that end up causing, you know, again, some kind of you know, with supply chain issues or you know, transportation issues that get in the way, and, you know, wait until the end. You know, it's like waiting until your car dies, and you know you're going to need a brand new one if that happens. But, you know, if you do some maintenance, it may give you a little, you know, a little more longer life. But this has been an area of low priority, I think, for most municipalities.
I'll tell you what, though, Dan, I think I would have, I wouldn't have minded being one of those drivers for those things.
Yeah.
We were up in the cockpit with a bunch of other people, and I felt like saying, get these other people out of here. I want to drive this a couple hundred years. Boy, those things are pretty neat. You ever been in one?
I have.
They're special, aren't they? I mean, boy, you're looking like you're on a battleship or something in those
huge
things. When do you think, and I don't think the Fed's going to do it, when do you think the market is just going to say, we're not doing this anymore? I mean, obviously you've got the people that have been making $10 an hour for really 20 years with prices going up all around them are saying, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, I mean, I think that's what's happened, to be honest with you.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
When do you think that somebody's going to say to the Fed, if they weren't, or say to the Treasury, if the Fed bailed out tomorrow on the next 10-year auction, where do you think the number would be if the Fed said, we're not helping you?
I don't know. I don't know if I want to put a number on it specifically, but I definitely think it's not going to be a good thing. It's certainly going to be, you know, it's definitely a concern. One thing is, you know, like I said, wages are one part of the equation, and that's, you know, something that absolutely has to be addressed, and it will be addressed, because otherwise we're going to just see, you know, more shutdowns and, you know, for reasons, other than good fundamentals or demand. So there will be, I think the supply demand picture needs to be, there has to be a little bit more proactive thinking by the Fed than reactive thinking. And I think what's happening is they're waiting for a shoe to drop and for some situations to respond to, you know, when they get pretty bad. And we're not quite there yet. There's still a lot of demand from investors, say, for yield. There's still a lot of cash out there that people are spending. You know, you have to be selective, although, like I said, I think recently we've been, you know, some names have traded off, so it's provided some good opportunities. But, yeah, I think there has to be, maybe more focus on, again, the numbers of what we're seeing right now and the fact that we are indeed having a situation of inflation that's going to particularly impact the consumer.
Well, they are smug, though, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does it bother you? It sure does me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's there's a disconnect for some reason, and I'm not really quite sure why, but there's a disconnect. I think the market is probably more connected to what's going on in the economy, the stock market, and the pricing is maybe a little bit inflated. Valuations may be up, but I think again in some areas those valuations have settled back. But I think when it comes to the Fed, there's a disconnect.
Did you hear? We're gonna dash here in a second, but the one it wasn't Maxine Waters, but it was an African American lady quizzing Powell at the whatever House committee that was, and she goes, "How come you're still using these inflation numbers that are so different from the people in my district? You're saying it's 2%. It's way more than 2%. What's the matter with you?" And he ran over her like he was in a bulldozer and she was a bug. Oh man, what are you talking about? We got to look at these big numbers, and man, there might be some transitory stuff in your district, but we don't care. You know, I mean, it was unbelievable what he said. And then, of course, her time was up, and they had to go on the next person. I mean, it was pretty scary, I thought. But
yeah,
anyway.
No, I agree. I totally agree. One sort of quick thing on our end: we our Creative High Income Fund that we manage for Interactive Advisors has just received its highest rating now. It's a Category 1 fund, and that's based on you know, less risk, more return.
That's what we all want. It's always a good thing. Less risk, more return.
Yeah.
Dan, thank you. We're going to try and put your the ones you talked about today, we're going to try and get them together and tweet them out, if you don't mind. We'll start doing
every
week.
Absolutely.
All right, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week, if not sooner.
You
too. S&P Futures up 1975. NASDAQ Futures up 84. We'll be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber. Everything is up today. Matty's got his golf clubs for sale. Everything is up. Every asset, Chris, then again, if you sell them, Matty, you got to pay up for the new ones. That's a problem.
That's right. I'm not selling them anytime soon.
No. SP futures up 20, 25. NASDAQ futures up 87. Dow futures up 174. Everybody's happy. Europe is very slow, though. Asia's slow. Europe is the upside. DAX is up 110.7. FTSE up 39.6, CAC around up 66, that's a full 1%, so we're bullish there as well. Nikkei up 34 cents, that's an unusual day, 0.00 on the movement there. Shanghai up 43 cents, another 0.01. Hang Seng up 65.2%, so not much going on, even with all the political stuff in Hong Kong, it doesn't seem to be affecting the market there at all. Yesterday we were down 71 on the Dow, down 4 in the S&P, up 18 in the NASDAQ, so yesterday was a slow day. Bonds virtually unchanged across the board, 1.48 10-year here, 1 minus 0.18. Japan is exactly unchanged at a positive 0.046. Oil, it's actually down now. It was up earlier. 72.64, it's down 44 cents. Brent down 40 cents, 74.79. Natural gas down 2 cents to 3.31. RBOB down a penny at 2.24. Gold is one of the few commodities that's actually creeping up here a little bit. Up 290 to 1786, trying to make it back at least to 1800, far cry from 1900. Silver up 3 cents, 26.15. Copper down 3 cents, 4.28. And we've got crypto, we got Bitcoin up 7.14, so it's virtually exactly in the middle of this 29.5 to 36.5 range it's been in for the last, several weeks. It's at 33,910. Matty, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We've been off to a good start this morning here on a Thursday, but we're starting to see a couple of issues out west. Looks like there's a crash on I-355 southbound just before Maple Avenue. This accident's blocking the three right lanes, and this is in the western suburbs near Naperville. Out there on I-355, so keep that in mind. That's our biggest issue right now on any of the expressways. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson, Eisenhower, and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Edens looks good.
Lakeshore Drive's quiet in both directions. Off the expressways, North Avenue at Bloomingdale Road, there's a crash out west. And then also on North Avenue at Pleasant Hill Road, just west of that first crash, there's another accident. But everything else looking good. Weather today, sunshine early, and then we'll have some storms rolling in later on. We'll reach a high of 82 degrees with the chance of rain. Right now it is mostly clear and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 79. In sports, the White Sox snapped their five-game losing streak. They beat the Pirates in Pittsburgh yesterday 4-3. Cubs were off. They're at L.A. to take on the Dodgers tonight. That's a 9:10 Chicago time first pitch. Diamondbacks lost to the Brewers 3-2. Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals tips off tonight, 6 p.m. Arizona time, as the Suns look to go up 3-0 on the Clippers. This will be the first road game. It'll also be the first game with Chris Paul.
Phoenix is now a basketball town, not a baseball town.
100%. Last place Diamondbacks and Western Conference Finals Suns will do that. But Chris Paul is back from COVID tonight as the Suns look to take control of that series. And lastly, as we talked a little bit last hour, legendary Blackhawks broadcaster Pat Foley announced that he will retire following the upcoming 21-22 season, which will be his 39th season broadcasting for the Blackhawks. He, of course, is a Hockey Hall of Famer and been doing this for a long time. So sad to see him go.
He doesn't want to watch this team anymore.
That could be.
Just saying. John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm okay. I was just I was talking last night that with so many sports things going on, the one that I've lost has been hockey. Is anybody playing tonight in hockey, Manny?
I know the Islanders played last night, so I assume the Western Conference is tonight.
I don't even know what happened in that game. I was watching a little bit of it, but you know, I watch a bit and I turn it off because I was watching some of the basketball.
Yeah, it was Game 6 last night. The Islanders won 3-2 in overtime to force a Game 7. So there'll be a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals between the Islanders and the Lightning. And then on the Western side, tonight it'll be the Canadiens looking to close out the series in a huge upset over the Vegas Golden Knights. Montreal leads 3-2. Game 6 tonight in Montreal. Montreal is one of the worst teams in NHL history to get this far, and they have a chance to now go to the Stanley Cup Finals.
But they are the Canadiens.
Yes, they barely made the playoffs. They were the biggest underdog in the first round, you know, in each round of the playoffs, they've been the biggest underdog, and they keep winning, which is why I always say hockey, it means absolutely nothing how good you are. It's all luck.
It just also means that these guys are actually pretty good. These teams are a lot more even than they are in the NBA.
They finished 16 games behind the Golden Knights in the standings.
At the end of the year,
they wouldn't have made the playoffs in any other
sport. But I watched them a couple times. They got a young team. They got a big, fast team. They're not. These guys are getting better as they go.
They clearly are. I mean, it's really just luck.
But I mean, you've seen that.
I watched. Yeah. I watched one game because I happened to bet on it, and it was Game 2. Vegas killed Montreal in Game 1. It was Game 2. Vegas, I think, had 30 more shots on goal and just dominated the entire game and lost. And I was thinking, why would I ever bet on hockey?
Yeah, but you don't get points in baseball for men left on the bases.
That's true. You don't. But in a goalie sport, when you're just peppering the net and then the other team can't even control the puck and you still lose, it only happens in hockey and in soccer, which is why you should never bet on those games.
Well, plus, the things that hit the post. But I think you can tell. I mean, I think you can tell, Matty. I'm not a genius on it, but it was obvious to me when you see stuff like Patrick Kane and the other guy, DeBrincat. Anytime, all of a sudden, if it's any kind of a real team they're playing, the dudes are playing 40 minutes. You know, you can just tell that they don't have near the depth in the two, three lines that these other teams do. I mean, you could tell the Hawks were not anywhere near. They would not.
That's why they were bad.
Yeah, but I'm saying some of these other teams. You know, the Hawks beat some. There was a team 2 years ago I watched them play, and the Hawks beat up on them like a couple of times, even though the Hawks weren't very good. And you could just tell the other guys had they had like me playing goalie, but they had every single guy was like bigger, faster, stronger. The guys on the Hawks, and you could just tell as the year went on, these guys were going to get better, and they did. I forget which team it was,
can happen.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it happened to the Bulls when they were very young when Jordan was there. You could just tell every playoff game they learned from it. You know, they were clearly on the uptick, and you know, you see that happen. I mean, but yeah, you're right. It is scary when you have like two bang off the post and you lose by one goal, huh?
Well, when you outshoot a team by 30 shots and you possess the puck the entire time and you still lose, you got to scratch your heads afterward and
well,
say, how did that happen?
Look at soccer when the game is...
That's what I'm saying. That's why those two sports, it's just complete luck as far as who wins a game, a particular game. And don't bet on them. That's the moral of my story.
Well, yeah. At least don't bet on the wrong team like you did. If luck went the other way, it wouldn't have been luck. You knew that. You knew it going in. God, it is amazing the psychology of a sports gambler. Wouldn't you say, Vinny?
It is. You remember the losses, you forget the wins.
I remember one of the times I went to the racetrack on my own. I go out there, and of course, I rush over. This is God, how long ago was this? And I buy the Sun-Times Turf Edition, which came out at what, like 10:30 or 11, Jen? Sun-Times, yeah. Sun-Times had the best track or sports horse, you know, thing. They had was it Feldman that did the.
Yeah, he was covered.
So you had the whole back page was Arlington or Hoffman or wherever it was, Manny. So you took that, so you raced that. And then, of course, you bought the racing form while you were there.
Have to.
And the funny thing about the racing form, for those that ever bought it, so somebody couldn't steal out. Some knave wouldn't go up and steal, like, the seventh race out of the racing form. The thing was all, what do you call it when it's slotted together? It's, like, perforated on the top?
Right.
So the first thing you had to do was take your finger and, like, go page to page and open up your racing form. All right, so now you got the racing form and you got the Sun-Times. So you get to the track and you buy, well, there's a green sheet.
You
got to
get the green sheet.
And the red sheet.
Yep.
And then there's two or three.
Those are usually cheap, but they're usually really sharp.
Yeah, and then there's like two or three cretins standing there, guys that make their living, so that they got their own private sheets. So then I buy like two or three from those guys because I can't say no to anybody. So now every single race I got five different horses picked. By the five different pieces of paper I have.
So that can happen, but usually you'll find maybe three races or two races where there's some consensus, and those are the ones you bet big. So
well, yeah,
across all your forms, if you see like everyone likes a long shot, or everyone you know really likes this horse to place or whatever the case may be, it'll only be like one race or maybe two races where they all kind of agree. Those are the ones that you really obviously bet big. The other ones, yeah, you're right. You got five different horses for every race, and you're like, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point of this? I just spent all this money. But also, when it's in pari-mutuel betting, if you're I think if you're a very informed bettor, especially with I'm going to say only 15% take. I actually think, Maddie and Jan, that it's possible to win. Now, after expenses and everything, I'm not so sure. My stepfather, who was a character, went to every single... He lived right on 63rd Street. It was right down, it wasn't very far to Sportsman's Park. He went to every... The meet was like 6 weeks long. He went to every single night of the week of the meet. And, of course, being the accountant that he was, he took track of his admission, his three beers, his two hot dogs, parking, and at the end of the meet, he had made like $10, which is pretty friggin' good when you think about it.
That's a great day.
Yeah, well,
kidding me?
Yeah, and so
you have a great like when we go to the races. And this has only happened to me once or twice where it actually happens. But go there all day on a Friday afternoon is when we would go. Drink beers, have a couple hot dogs, bet on all the races. Take the Metro back, have a couple drinks on the Metro there and back, and if you came out after all that, and if you still came out ahead, even if it was like $15, man, you were happy.
Absolutely.
It's a win, yeah.
It's a massive win. But I will say this, that a real gambler is not going to bet every race, and I can't sit there and not bet the race.
I can't either, but you're right. That was kind of what I was saying. Yeah. You pick out the two where you're like, oh, wow, these are the home runs, and you pound those, and then you sit the other ones out.
Well, plus if you're I'm not an expert on it, but if you go to the harness races, the buggies, I don't know if you knew this, maybe every race is a mile, right? Every single race is a mile, so you can sort of take a look at the times, and the horses that are in the feature race, the times are going to be a few seconds faster than the schlump races. But basically, you can compare somebody. You never know the track conditions, that kind of stuff, but it's easier to compare one race to the other. But the flats, the thoroughbreds, every horse there might only have run 6 furlongs before, and this race is 7.
Right.
So unless you're somebody who really knows that John Flanagan has this horse that's actually pretty damn good, and by the way, first he or she was running 5 five furlongs and did pretty good, now six, and now they're ready to come up to seven. If you don't have that kind of, if you're not waiting for that horse to step up into this non-winner's race and bet your whole mount for the day on that, just that race, you're not really a gambler, right? I mean, you don't have the discipline to, I mean, if you're going out there to have a good time and look at the girls and have a few beers and bet every race, even if you're, you know, you're not a dummy, you're probably not going to win, right? I mean, but it's not a profession to you, right? It's like I look at trading a lot different. It's my profession.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It's a big difference. But anyway, I hope we don't get to the point where we have no horse racing.
That was going to be my question, Tom. Well, what's happened? These parks can't make it. Remember that the TV coverage that racing used to get, you know, it was a big part of the sports coverage in every local news program for years and years. I can't believe it's that nobody follows it or nobody cares about it, but it's like it's gone the way of boxing and, you know, bowling. These things don't have the pull they did, and I just don't see them surviving, at least not in the media.
I was trying to ask my people I was debating last night, but I think they had a little too much alcohol. What has changed? And Jan, you probably know this by being older than Maddie, but do you lose your support? Does your support die in the legislature when people get older or whatever? I mean, racing had that's how the state made money on gambling. And they, you know, they didn't get every favor on earth, but, you know, they were dealt with pretty generously by the state, and the state was pretty happy with their 15%, and you used to get 20,000 people every night at Sportsman's Park, right, in Hawthorne?
And they had a powerful lobby.
Yeah, and they had a powerful lobby. But we're talking 20, 25,000 people every single night.
Right.
And for a long period of time, Maddie, horse racing was the largest attended sport in the country, by far, over baseball or football. I mean, it was even higher than baseball. I mean, which you know, you would never have guessed. Then for a while, wasn't it auto racing, Jan?
Yeah.
I mean, so now you look at it and you say, what are you talking about? I mean, in boxing at the turn of the last century was clearly the number one sport, right? Without doubt, I mean, boxing was your highest attended sport. So is it just that when all of a sudden now we need, let's say, casinos, and all of a sudden the people lobby the new legislators, is it just that casinos now become the favorite son, and then all of a sudden it's going to be sports betting? Now they've lobbied the hell out of people, and like Lou was saying earlier, it's so much different than 30 years ago.
I just don't understand how sports betting got separated from horse racing.
Well, that's right. What I'm saying.
Racing was always gambling based. I mean, this was the cornerstone of it. And did sports betting generally, or the gambling industry, begin to whittle away at the intrigue or the allure that horse racing had? I don't know.
I'm willing to bet with the huge increase in popularity in sports betting in states where it's legal, like Illinois, where now I have friends that have never bet on a horse race or a baseball game in their entire lives are betting games every night now because it's so easy on your phone. And you can do it for $1, you can do it for $5, you can do it for whatever you want. And they have all kinds of bonuses and different things like that. If why they're not promoting horse racing more and making it even
more,
as opposed to pushing it aside, there must be something that the horse racing people are doing that's
well, that's what I'm saying. They've somehow fallen out of favor. And matter of fact, when this restaurant and bar bill, the whole rest of the state, you know, you can have video poker in the place. The one place that was banned from having it was racetracks. Now you can't tell me Arlington Park doesn't have a massive bar and restaurant in the place. Why can't they just open up and have and have the sport, the video poker there?
I agree.
But obviously the people at the Rivers Casino didn't want that, right? Because they're right down the road.
Yeah.
True.
So, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with just you're falling out with your legislatures, or they left and died, the new guys are taking over or something. It's weird.
Did the off-track betting phenomenon, you know, cause racing to die too? I mean,
that's why Steinbrenner bought Balmoral Park. Because he bought, and I was like, why the hell would he buy? Balmoral used to get, I don't know, what would you say, Maddie or Jan? Would they get 6 weeks of a harness meet? Because it's way down south.
And Washington Park was not far away, too. You know, both of them defunct now. So.
Well, Washington Park was burned down by Madison Square Garden Corp. But Washington Park at one time had higher, until the tri-state was built, or the Kennedy was built, Washington Park at a much higher people showing up than Arlington. It was a stronger park, I think. We were talking about 1950.
Yeah, pulled from Indiana.
Pulled from everywhere. It was like, 157th and Halsted or something? 170?
Just north of where I work, yeah. There's a big shopping mall there now, Washington Square Mall.
But anyway, the off-track betting, every owner of every track got an off-track betting place. So it wasn't like, you know, Matty Weber could apply for one. If you owned Balmoral Park, you got one. If you owned Arlington Park, you got one. And that's why Steinbrenner bought Balmoral, so he could have an all... and then they expanded it to two off-track betting facilities, because... What was unusual, what was different, more than people need to know probably, is we went through a while ago how the pari-mutuel system works, the betting pool. When New York went with off-track betting, Matty, it was a totally separate pool. So there was the racetrack pool, the win-place show pool, and then there was the off-track pool. So if you bet on some nag and he won, if you bet him at the track, it might pay $18. If you bet him off-track, it might have paid $14. So when they did the off-track betting here, it actually made more sense and helped the racetracks out when they still wanted to. The money you spent at the off-track place went into the pool at Arlington Park. So if you put $2 down or $100 down at the off-track betting place, if you're watching the board at Arlington, you'd see the $100 come up on the board. So there was only one pool, so the owners of the tracks ended up owning the off-track betting, and that was really big for a while. There were two or three places downtown here.
The one at State and Lake I went to a couple times with guys I worked with. I haven't been to the one out south, like along the Bishop Ford Expressway, but that's a big place, too.
Well, there was one right here in Jackson. The guys in the trading floor, we get a load of this, Matty. They would charge you an admission to cash your ticket. Well, that
what?
Went, yeah, that went over like a fart in church.
Jesus.
That's capitalism.
The guy, because there were people in the trading floor that had their numbers on the trifecta, right? So, I mean, if you're ever going to win a funky trifecta, you got to have your numbers, because you would never have picked, you know, the three lousiest horses in the race. So you'd always have, you know, or we're 364 our numbers or something, whatever numbers we wanted to be. So guys would run over and they'd bet those numbers every day. One day these guys won and they made the clerk pay like $5 to get in a place to cash his ticket. They were not happy. But they had really good food, evidently, the one here on Jackson. It was right, I think it was right upstairs from the beef joint. Is it Al's or whatever? Not Al's. Whatever the beef joint is, right over on Jackson there, Matty, or Adams or...
Oh, yeah. What the hell is that place called?
Luke's, yeah. I think it was upstairs from Luke's. But then, guys had run over there right after... There were guys that traded all day and ran over to OTB to bet at the horses afterward after you trade all day. I'm like, what do you need to do that for? You just spent...
Well, they did have good food, yeah. And, you know, beers. And I wonder how much of that, too, cut into the revenue at the park. If people were going there instead of...
Yeah, but what I'm saying, John, is as long as you were in the pool... You benefited the park,
right? That's true. Yeah.
But the only thing the park missed was the person actually showing up, type of thing. But I mean, the guy who raced over there for the last three races after the trading floor was not about to beam himself to Arlington Park. You know what I mean? Anyway, the city stuff, John. I wanted to talk a little bit about shifting gears. As I've had, as you know, our Notre Dame buddies, only got a couple minutes. Are sending me all kinds of stuff about them. They finally figured out about the murders here and stuff and the shootings. They're like, what's going on economically there? Are people still investing? And now they also, you only got 2 minutes to answer all these questions. They just pushed, in a few states now, the eviction out like another month. And I have, you know, some cocktails once in a while with a couple guys that are in that industry, and they say they're getting like really, really busy. You know, what happens when you can all of a sudden kick people out? Is everybody going to kick everybody out or what?
Well, you know, we got a real problem here with squatters and people who just end up in places. If you have furniture in there, the cops are unlikely to force you out because you've got evidence of possession. How you got it, the police aren't really interested or have the energy or authority to investigate. So they'll just kick it down the road and let, you know, the sheriff figure out someday later. But I really think everybody's afraid of what's going to happen when this actually does kick in. And as a result, it's going to be pushed ahead a couple more times before it actually unravels. And then I don't know if people are really going to, you know, be too pleased at how things pan out, because you're going to see a real convulsion in homelessness and rent fluctuations and people trashing properties and everything else, it's not going to be a good thing for just, you know, the peace and tranquility of the city when you've got that kind of upheaval. I think everybody in every city is afraid of that, and they're all hoping they can push it off a little more because they're dreading the consequences.
Well, what is, if you were a renter and all of a sudden you get this thing, you know, whether you can't afford to pay or you can't, but say you can only afford half or something, you end up with a part-time job, who knows, but you at least paid the half, or for, let's say, 6 months. I'll just use 6 months. I think it's been more than that. But then you decide, all right, screw you, I'm leaving. Now, when you go to the next place, why would anybody take you in? I mean, if you paid half and it's all you could do, I understand that part. But if you just said, I'm not paying a nickel, and as soon as the time ends, you leave, how do you get another lease?
Well, you know, your credit report will be against you, and then how that gets reported. If you've got otherwise okay credit, it might, you know, you might be able to skate through and get another lease. If you have a history of you know, walking out on stuff, or stiffing people, writing bad checks, or you name it, you're going to be screwed in any kind of a market. But I suspect here there's a lot of people who are not necessarily in that bad a shape, but they've just been stretched completely. And maybe they've got some bad debts out there, stuff they can't cover, but it isn't enough to put them out of the rental market. It's more likely that they're going to strip the apartment of everything they can that they can sell.
Yeah,
leave the landlord to replace light switches. And
we got to dash, Dan. Maybe I'll even see you tonight. Maddie, for just quick 10 seconds, guess what I saw last night?
What's
first
that?
Time in 18 months. Went downstairs to the bar in the building and meet a couple of people. They actually had a company party in there with a bunch of pizzas, and it felt so good to see it. There was like 25, 30 people, ordered up a bunch of pizzas, and were sitting there after work. It felt good to see it. It really did.
Very nice.
I mean, it's been so long. I'm like, what are those people over there doing? I'm like, oops, it's a party, you idiot. You remember those? I'm like, anyway, thank you, Jan. Thank you, Matty. S&P Futures up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 82. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.